Great to be back here. Great to be with you. Great to bring the word. It's a privilege. There was this couples retreat which was going on, and the resource person who was doing the retreat, he asked the husbands to come forward and said, all the husbands who always listen to their wives, stand on my right side, and the husbands who don't listen to their wives, stand on my left side. Right? So he repeated it a couple of times to make sure that people understand. Okay? So finally he found that everyone was here except one person who was standing here. So he said, brother, I'm very happy to see you on this side. Now, at least someone who breaks the rules. So what makes you stand here? He said, I don't know. My wife asked me to stand here. So if I don't say anything about Hawaii, it's because Leslie has told me not to say. But thank you. Thank you for praying for me during my training in Haggai. And thank you for taking care of Leslie and Neville. I know some of you have visited her personally, and a number of you have kept in touch with her. So thank you a lot. It's good to be among believers who care, you know. And the Haggai experience was a great experience. Not because of Hawaii. Not because of Maui, the beaches, and whatever else goes with the beaches. But, the stated purpose, I want to read that. The stated purpose of Haggai is, and by the way, it's the pronunciation, but don't think that I have become American by going one month there. It's actually Haggai. Because that's his name, okay? So Dr. John Edmund Haggai is the founder of this institute. So the stated purpose of this institute is to advance the skills of qualified Christian leaders to more effectively evangelize their own people and to train others to do so. That is to advance the skills of leaders who are already leaders in evangelizing their people more effectively, and to train others to do so. And this is very close to my heart, because it touches two of the aspects that I am very passionate about. Evangelism and leadership. And specifically on servant leadership. So that's the reason why I consider it a blessing that, I was able to go there and do this. And again, once again, I thank you for, your prayer in enabling me to go there and, get this knowledge. The faculty is not Western. The faculty is all from third world countries, Asia, Africa, Latin America, and so are the participants. And the faculty is chosen primarily based on their personal hands-on experience in evangelism. And the participants are also from the third world countries. So it was a great experience, understanding the challenges in evangelism for the various, in the various parts of the world, how to, topics included things like how to prepare yourself first, through personal discipline of a leader. How to prepare yourself so that you can evangelize better through your family life, personal life with God, your family life, your church life, your social life, and things like that. Then, of course, the models of evangelism and understanding the worldviews and other faiths like Buddhism, Muslims, and Islam, and, tribals and other areas, and a number of other, how to set goals, how to take leadership in the place where you are placed. And, so I after going through this, I personally believe, I'm convinced that, there is immense value in what Haggai is doing. In faith, I have recommended a number of your names, for future training. So in case you hear from them, please prayerfully consider attending it. I think it will be a blessed experience for us to go through. I before I get into the message that the Lord wants to bring us today, I want to basically highlight four things that, I come back with. Number one is, I've always been passionate about evangelism, preaching the gospel to others. And, this training has, sort of reinforced that need, that urgency so much that I'm really on fire, to go and share the gospel with someone, and so it's really, really, really reinforced, and urgency. And I was amazed when I came in Ranjit shared with me a pamphlet which is specifically about, I think it is there with Ranjit, and I encourage that, if it is possible, you attend this. There's a program which is organized with Richmond Town Methodist Church, specifically on taking the Gospels to the Muslims. And the statistics that I've seen while I was at Haggai is mind-boggling, actually. Islam is the big, fastest growing faith in the whole world. They are already at 25% of the world population. And they're growing at least 70% more than what Christianity is growing at today. So there is a great, need and a great urgency to be reaching out to, especially faiths like, and the Quran is so much full of, Jesus Christ and his life and his prophecies about him. So it should be easier probably to reach out to them with the message. So please, if you're interested, talk to Ranjit later. He has got the pamphlets, and it will be good for us to go and attend that. So that was the number one, evangelism. The number two is the Lord was confirming to me about my ministry that I have started among the professionals. So he was confirming that the call is there, and you are in the right place. Continue working with those professionals that I have placed you in. The third, I'm more than ever before convinced that servant leadership model is the right model to follow when I need to evangelize more effectively. And fourthly, this may be good news for Leslie, especially. Some of you know that I have at times toyed with the idea of, I struggle, and I still struggle, how to balance my work, my family life, and the ministry that Lord has entrusted to me too. So there are times when I have toyed with the idea of quitting the job. That's the easiest thing to do, quit the job and get into full-time ministry. But while I was there in Haggai, the Lord continued speaking to me. And, John 15:16, it's not you who have chosen me, but I have chosen you so that you can go and bear fruit, right? 1 Peter 2:12, live such good lives among the pagans so that they will see your good deeds and glorify our Father in heaven. John 17:18, just as you send me to the world, I am sending them to the world. So these messages kept on coming to me, and so I'm convinced that I need to be in my secular job for as long as I can, because the Lord is telling me that He has already given me a pulpit. He's already given me, my field for sharing the gospel. So I plan to continue in my job and not fall to the temptation of getting into full-time ministry for some more time. So that's one strong decision that I have taken. Well, I guess that's about my testimony. I think I need to be reminded that we also need to. I'm called here to also bring a sermon to you. So, this last point, what I said about the Lord placing each one of us in a particular place, in a particular position, so that we could minister to where we have been placed, rather than asking God to place us where we feel comfortable, right? That's what I want to speak about this morning. Okay. So let me do a reality check. Those of you who are members of BBF, who have been members of BBF, do you remember the purpose statement of BBF? Silence is a good answer. Something more louder will be better. Do we remember the purpose statement? Right? Yes. Right? So I'm going to read it, and I'm going to ask all of us to repeat it once. So let me read it once. We are a body of believers making a difference as light and salt at the workplace and in the community under the Lordship of Jesus Christ. This is the purpose statement of Bangalore Bible Fellowship. Okay? This is the purpose statement of our fellowship that we are worshipping. Shall we all say it together? Okay? Okay. All right. Okay. That's a little bit. We are a body of believers. Making a difference as light and salt at the workplace and in the community under the Lordship of Jesus Christ. So this is of course based on Matthew 5:13-17, right, where Matthew talks, I mean, Jesus is talking to his disciples about being the salt and the light. So that's the brief message that I want to bring in today, this morning. Right. So let's keep your Bibles open to Matthew chapter 5. We'll go through that, you know, a couple of verses there and then go back and forth. Now, some of us know this pretty well, salt and light, pretty simple, obvious message. But let's try and revisit it. Let's try and reaffirm what we understand about being salt and light today. Right? That's what we will try and do. Now, those of us who know the structure of Matthew know where is this placed? You know, this message about salt and light. It's right at Matthew chapter 5. You know, and what is Matthew chapter 5 about? Right? It is what is the beginning of what is more commonly known as the Sermon on the Mount, right? And you know, at least there are three theologians here, and one probably past theologian. So I need to be careful about what I speak about the Bible. But scholars say that you know, the book of Matthew is built into five specific blocks of Jesus' teachings, and there are of course scholars who even draw a parallel to the five first books of the Bible, five books of Moses, the Pentateuch, as it is called, and the five blocks of teaching. So just for those of you who are interested, these are the five blocks. One is the first one is the Sermon on the Mount, chapter 5 to chapter 7. The mission of the 12 is the second one, the second part of chapter 9 to 10. And then parables of the kingdom, chapter 13. Community of the kingdom, chapter 18. Finally, the woes of legalistic religion and signs of the end times, which is from chapter 23 till the end of chapter 26. So five blocks of teachings, and Sermon on the Mount is the very beginning. And this message of Jesus to be the salt and light is placed right at the beginning, more or less at the beginning of the Sermon on the Mount. Now, so this comes at chapter 13, I mean verse 13, right? Being the salt comes at around verse 13. But what comes before that? What does Jesus tell the disciples just before he asks them to be the salt and light? This is not a conventional church, so you can talk back to me. We talk to each other, no problem. Okay. So what comes just before Jesus asks them to be the salt and light? What is the section before that? It is the Beatitudes, right? Chapter 5 starts with Beatitudes. And when does the Beatitudes come in? I mean, if you really see the context, this is followed by a huge crowd, right? There's a lot of people who are following Jesus. And then Jesus, of course, sees the crowd. And then he decides to go into the mountain to seek the face of the Lord. And then he sits down and starts teaching. You know, each of these have got their own significances, especially in the Jewish custom. Going up to the mountain means seek the face of the Lord. Sitting down means to teach, right? So now you can teach me because you are the ones who are sitting down, and I am the one who is standing up. But if you really see, before Jesus asked the disciple to be the salt and light, he teaches them the Beatitudes. Now, and I believe, just as in anything else, this is not coincidence. This is planned. This is intentional. This is deliberate. Jesus does not do things, you know, just by chance. Let's look at the disciples' you know, feelings. Now, by this time, Jesus has become very popular, right? That's why there are huge crowds following him, right? The Sermon on the Mount is about, you know, there are huge crowds following Jesus. So now, the disciples who are close to Jesus have every reason to feel important, isn't it? I'm serving a leader, I'm with a leader, and the leader has got a lot of followers. Obviously, you know, everyone wants to be with the leader who has got a lot great followership. Now, so there is a temptation for the disciples to feel important about it, to feel proud of being associated with Jesus Christ. And you know, use that pride for whatever else. You know, it could be for power, it could be for money, and whatever else. Right? So that is why Jesus starts the teaching by asking them first not to fall into this temptation. That is what Beatitudes is about. It is about telling them not to fall by the worldly values of pride, of power, or whatever else it could be, which could be associated with seeking fame and, power and things like that. And so Jesus is preparing the disciples first. First, be humble, be pure in heart, be meek, before you start thinking about becoming the salt and light. So even before the message of salt and light comes, Jesus prepares the disciples, right? Not to feel proud, not to feel that. You know, and as I am a student of servant leadership, I see a servant leadership message here, right? This is actually preparing the ground for the people to be servants. Of course, this is a message which Jesus will reinforce further later on in Matthew 20, 25, 28, where he says, you know, the Gentiles lord over the people, but not so you. You are to be serving, because this Son of Man came not to be served, but to serve. This is a message which Jesus will reinforce by demonstrating in John chapter 13, by washing the disciples' feet and telling them that what I did, you need to follow. Because I set an example, and if you do so, you will be blessed. Right? So there is this servant leadership message here. But for now, what he wanted to do was to make sure that the disciples don't fall into the temptation of the power and the fame and all the glory that can come by following a leader who is popular at that point in time. Right? Well, that's for them. How about us? What does it mean to us? What is its relevance to us? We know that if we read the purpose statement, we know that we are called to be the salt and light. But before we do that, how do we consider the membership or the attendance in Bangalore Bible Fellowship as? Do we have any pride associated with being part of the BBF? Do we consider BBF as sort of a class apart from other churches and other fellowships? What's our approach? What's in our mind? The Lord is asking us this morning to look into ourselves and see if we feel proud to be part of this fellowship. Proud in the negative way of being proud. The Lord is asking us, remember the Beatitudes before we can begin to be the salt and light. So, having seen what needs to be done before we become the salt and light, let us quickly look at what does it mean to be the salt and light. Okay? Well, what are some of the qualities of salt that we know of? Sorry? Taste? Okay? Sorry? Preservation? Yeah? Great. Okay? Okay, let's take taste. Salt by itself. How many of us eat salt for salt's sake? Do we eat salt? We don't eat salt, right? Salt is added to the food so that the food is tasty. Isn't it? Now what happens if we add more salt? What do we taste? Do we taste the food or do we taste the salt? We taste the salt. And is that what we want? No, right? We want to add salt just the right amount so that the food is it acquires the right flavor, acquires the right taste. Now there's a message in it for us. When we try to be the salt, if we overdo it, we are going to stand out like salt. They're going to taste us and not the Lord, not the gospel. Because, like I said, salt, of course, it needs to come out of the cellar before it adds flavor. So you've got to first come out of the cellar, but then even when you come out of the cellar, it's got to be in the right amount. So we got to be careful as to what is the right amount. If we don't have enough salt, the food doesn't taste good. If we have too much of salt, it tastes of salt rather than of the food. Both are two extremes. So we got to be prayerfully finding out what is the right amount of salt that we become. So the question that we need to ask ourselves is, when we become salt, are we drawing attention to ourselves? Or are we really drawing the attention to the gospel that we want to? Are we adding flavor to the community that we live in Or are we trying to stand out in the community that we live, where we work or live or whatever it is? What is our approach is what God wants us to look at. Let's go to Leviticus 2, Leviticus 2nd chapter. Want to see another aspect of salt, right? Leviticus 2, verse 13. Can someone read it quickly? Leviticus 2:13.
Season all your grain offerings with salt. Do not leave the salt of the covenant of your God out of your grain offerings. Add salt to all your offerings.
Right. The Lord is asking, when you bring your grain offerings, make sure that you season it with salt. And he even says, the salt of the covenant of your God. The salt of the covenant of your God. So for God, the salt that the Israelites are supposed to offer is a part of their way of making sure that, you know, what they offer is durable, is preserved. What Stefan said, absolutely. So this is about preserving what you offer to the Lord, right? So salt is also a preservative, but also it is an offering to the Lord. So when you offer, you become salt and you are becoming an offering to the Lord, right? So that's the other thing that you need to. Now let's think about preservative, right? We know what is preservative, right? We preserve. So the question that we need to ask ourselves, and again in this new world, there's always temptation to, you know, to dilute the gospel so that it fits in with the worldviews, with the people, with the culture and things like that. I think Patrick in his first sermon talked about distorting the gospel, right? But without necessarily distorting the gospel, we could still want to do some slight adjustments in the gospel so that it fits in. It becomes acceptable, right? Now, one thing that, you know, that has spoken to me very constantly in Haggai when I was there is the fact that there might be different methods of evangelism, and the methods can vary because of the times, right? What is applicable in Paul's time might not necessarily be applicable at today. But the principle of the gospel remains the same. Principle of the gospel remains the same. I was actually encouraged with what Neville reads nowadays in the morning, his daily devotion. It's about how do we bring a balance. And this person, the reader, Selvin Hughes, he uses these terms. Christians are called to be conservationists. Okay? And he uses this term conservationist because he says, if I use the term conservationist, people won't like it, right? Because we don't want to be termed as conservatives, right? We want to be seen as modern, educated, sophisticated people. So none of us want to be seen as conservatives. So Selden uses this term conservationist. He says, you don't need to be conservatives, but you need to conserve. You need to preserve the gospel in its trueness, in its intact. Because that cannot change. That cannot change. So that's the second question that we need to ask about ourselves when we are talking about being the salt. While trying to preserve, are we really trying to preserve the gospel, or are we trying to, you know, adjust it to the world view? Okay, so that's about salt. Let's look at the light part. Right. Apparent meaning is clear. Light, you know, remove darkness, bring in light so that they are able to see. So I want to again talk about two things about light. Okay. What a lot of us do is we cover ourselves. We don't necessarily, you know, show up ourselves so others don't see us. We don't want to see others and things like that. But Jesus is asking us to be light on a lampstand, not a light under a bowl, right? That's what the Matthew 5:13-17, what it says is, be a light on the lampstand, not a light which is covered under the bowl. Of course, there are a lot of linkages to what is said in the, you know, in Isaiah and things like that. I will come to that. But before that, we need to make sure that Jesus says, let your light shine so that others will see the good deeds that you're doing and glorify our Father in heaven. Right? So we need to make sure that the works that we do is not for our own glorification, but for the glorification of Jesus Christ and our Father. And again, remember, light Light is about sight, right? Light is not about hearing, right? So it's really not what we speak. It is really not the eloquent words that we can discuss, or the brilliant way in which we can bring a sermon about evangelizing that matters. It is the way that we live that others can see that matters when it comes to being the light. Right? That's the reason why Jesus didn't say be a foghorn or be a car horn or something. He said be the light so that others can see. Now again, remember, a light, we have lights, but typically a light is, even when we put decorative lights, the purpose of a light is not to be seen by itself, right? If you put this light on, we are not putting it on so that we can look at it. We are putting it on so that by using that light, we can see the other things around us. Okay? So the same way that we talked about salt, it is not to draw attention to ourselves, but by being the light, draw attention to the gospel. That we are called to become lights. No? So that's the second aspect of light. There's another important aspect of light. Matthew 5:14, that is where Jesus talks about light, needs to be seen in context or in connection with John 8:12. So shall we go to John 8:12, please? John 8:12. Right. So Jesus is saying here, I am the light of the world, and he ends the statement by saying, I am the light of life. Right? So when you talk about being the light, we got to be sure who is the actual, the original light. Right? So if we go by Matthew 5:14 in itself, then we are doing it by ourselves. But if we combine Matthew 5:14 with John 8:12, we then reflect the light that Jesus is and thereby provide direction for others. And that's what, and the statement of John 8:12 itself is actually a fulfillment of the prophecy of Isaiah. Isaiah 60:19, where he says, the sun will not be there anymore. The God shall be the light. God shall be your light. And of course, If you go forward, there is a future reference too in Revelation 21:23, where it says, in the New Jerusalem, there are no lights, there is no sun, there is no moon. God Himself is the light provided. So Jesus is actually bridging that, the prophecy to the final thing, by saying, look, I am the light of the world, and I provide everlasting light of life, or light of everlasting life, whichever way you want. So the message for us here is when we try to become lights, we need to make sure that we are not doing it by ourselves, but we are trying to reflect the light which is Jesus, and through our life reflect that for others so that others could see. So in other words, being a light for me is my relationship with Jesus. So it is not me alone, but how do I relate with Jesus. This morning, Lord is asking us to re-examine and ask ourselves, what is our relationship with Jesus? How personal are we in our relationship with Jesus? Are we right in our relationship with Jesus? That's the message that the Lord is putting in my heart to ask ourselves. Let me conclude. So we have basically seen a couple of things, right? So those who have already accepted Jesus, I know in this congregation there are a number of you who have already accepted Jesus, who already have a personal relationship with Jesus. For those of us who are in that stage, I want to encourage, how well do we fit into the BBF purpose statement of being the salt and light in the workplace, in the community, under the context of what we have seen, of what salt means, what light means. Right. More importantly, are we preparing ourselves to be the light? Are we fighting the temptation to fall for the power, for the strength, for the power, for the deception, for the honor, for the glory that comes of being associated with the body of Christ? Or are we really trying to add flavor to the place where he has placed us, whether it is workplace or community or whatever it is, so that they see the good works that we do and give glory to our Father in heaven. Are we reflecting the light that Jesus shines, and are we right in our relationship with Christ? Let me end with this. For those of us who have not yet accepted Jesus as our personal Savior, or not sure about where we are in our relationship with Jesus Christ, let me encourage you that Jesus is the light of the world, and He alone offers everlasting life, light for everlasting life. So those of us who have not yet made a personal decision, those of us who are yet to take that personal decision, I encourage you, pray, and He will open your eyes so that you can accept Him and have a personal relationship with Jesus Christ. Can I ask Ashish to please pray and close the benediction?
The next few moments of silence, let us think implications of